This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. We've filled you in on a couple of trends this hour. Later, we hear about one of the consequences of young people waiting longer to have children. They're turning their attention to pets, not kids. We meet two dinks with dogs and find out why this is happening. But first, the changing nature of work. Years ago, it was considered an achievement if you could break free of the cubicle farm that was your office and telecommute by working from home or even a table at Starbucks. But now another work trend is emerging, perhaps because people found they were lonely working from home. They're now gravitating to what have come to be called co-working spaces. It's like going back to the office in that the amenities can be similar, but the atmosphere is different. These co-working spaces are popping up all over, and we're going to find out more about them this hour. Ryan Mitchell is co-founder of Advent Co-working. Garrett Tishy is owner of Huga, another co-working space. And Heather Litton is senior interior project manager at Perkins & Will, an architecture and design firm. I'm assuming that you work in the design of some of these spaces. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Well, welcome to all three of you. Nice to have you here. So I kind of explained co-working, but I don't know much about it. So you tell me what it's all about. How would you describe what a co-working space is? And I'll begin with you, Garrett.
Sure. So co-working to me is flexible shared workspace. So a space that feels good, that houses people of all industries. That simple.
Brian?
Yeah, and I would add to that that typically it focuses on community and programming, so like events and different offerings that members can interact and maybe even connect to find jobs.
So how does this differ from these key man buildings that have been around for years or these, I forgot the names of them. There's several companies that run these big, they take a floor or two in one of the skyscrapers and they will rent you an office for a monthly fee, and you have the use of the copier and the break room and the receptionist. How does it differ from those places?
I think with those kind of key man style offices, a lot of it is you go in, you shut the door behind you, and you do your work, and then you leave at the end of the day. Where co-working, we do a lot of things to encourage interaction, people getting out in spaces. A lot of the times, co-working spaces will have communal open workspaces. So at Advent Co-working, we don't have any closed-door offices at all. It's just open workspace that's first-come, first-served seating.
And I know, Heather, you help design these spaces not only as work co-working spaces for co-working companies, but for companies that aren't co-working companies, like I don't know, Bank of America, for instance, might call you and say, we think this is a good idea for a certain department. We'd like to create one of these spaces. So when you sit down to do that, what do you think of? What goes through your mind?
We recently worked with McKinsey in Atlanta on a project very similar to that, and they wanted to create kind of this collaboration zone that was in addition to their standard office space. So they kind of carved out a piece of their space, and they created a story behind it. They wanted it to be about Southern hospitality, so they called it the Soho. And it was actually, they had an area where it was more about communal, so they had a fireplace, gathering, a kind of a nod to a kitchen. And then they also had these carols that you could do in like kind of almost like a rail car kind of experience where you could do individual work in those spaces and have small team rooms where you could do teaming, things like that. And then also having a workspace where they could put projects together and they could display what they were working on. So you really saw them come together and making a unique space that was all their own.
Is this an outgrowth of the open classrooms that a lot of young people experienced in school where they didn't sit in rows of desks, but in fact they sat around circular tables or they sat in a circle or they had big open rooms where everybody was working on different things at the same time? Is that what this is, an outgrowth
of that? I think a lot it has to do with education and that you see more now that people will say 80% of the work they're doing has to do with another person. So most of the work now is collaborative, not a single individual contributor.
So Garrett, you call your working space Huga. It's spelled H-Y-G-G-E.
Yes.
It's Danish. What does it mean? Why is it pronounced Huga?
Danish. So we chose it really because it doesn't translate directly in English, but is kind of a way of life there, and people will associate it with feeling comfortable in a space. And for me, I came from a corporate job where I resented my workspace, liked my job, but didn't really like going to the office, never felt good. So
Why not?
I went into a room by myself, closed the door, and worked there by myself all day.
Okay.
It was a job where we were so busy all the time that there was never a moment where we could take a break and collaborate. So it was very important that Huga makes people feel good. They, in all of our cases, people have the choice to be here. They could work at home. They could work at a coffee shop for free. They all pay to be here. So it has to feel really good.
Mm-hmm. And you call your space, Ryan, Advent. Is that purposeful? Because a lot of these spaces are geared toward people who are startups, enterprise, entrepreneurs, et cetera?
Yeah, we kind of came up with the word Advent co-working because it's the start of something new. And mm-hmm. we were kind of trying to start a little bit different way of working in Charlotte.
So the people that come to these co-working spaces, are they coming because they are startups or because they are tired of working at home? Because if you didn't like, for instance, going to an office and closing the door and being by yourself all day in an office environment, that's what happens when you work at home a lot. You have this little room off to the side, and you close that door so you won't be distracted by the home aspect of being mm-hmm. working at home. Is that what people come to you for, to get away from that?
Yeah, I think there's a couple different people that come to our space. So the work from home folks, they find often cases they can't actually work from home because the laundry's there, the kids are knocking on the door, whatever it is just distracting them. We have freelancers and small companies that need office space. They need to meet with clients, but you know, to get into a lease for 2, 3, 5 years is very expensive when you're just a small company.
You may not last that long.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of these folks are trying new things, right. And to have an overhead of a traditional office is just not something they can do. And they also want the collaborative part of meeting individuals in the space.
But if there are distractions at home from the kids and the dog and the laundry and the fact that, oh, you know, maybe something's on daytime television I'd like to watch. What is the – I can't imagine that. But what about the distractions of working in a big open space with lots of other people who are doing very different things, and phone calls are going on, and,
sure.
and people are sitting there talking to each other, and they're up at the coffee machine? What about those distractions?
So for us, Huga's a little bit different than Advent in that we're not one giant open space. We're a combination of open workspace that's pretty segmented. We're about 9,000 square feet. We do have 17 private offices. So for us, over the last 9 months, we've noticed that pockets of culture are developing. So there clearly is a spot near the kitchen where people are a lot more social. But if you want to avoid that, mm-hmm. you can go in different places. Something that I've realized, especially since in the beginning when there were very few members, everything felt distracting. Now that we have, you know, 100 members or so, the more people in the space, the less distracting everything is. Everything's just white noise.
And Ryan, you have the open space. You don't have
Yeah.
Any.
So we have to really focus on the culture that we build at Advent. Everything from, you know, just kind of general guidelines to we have little rubber duckies, and it's called the quack off rule. So generally, you can be approached at any time to be talked to, but if you have a rubber ducky out in front of you, it's quack off. So leave me alone. Don't talk to me.
So that's it's like putting a rubber band on the doorknob. Leave me alone.
Kind of.
Don't come in. I'm busy. The office environment has gone through lots of transitions over time. Everybody used to have an office, which is why it's called the office. And then, I guess, clerical workers and all the typing pool of the 1950s just had desks out in the open of great big rooms, and they would type all day. Then along came cubicles to give some little bit of privacy to some people. Now we're going back. What's happening here? And why are we changing all these designs all the time? Will we ever hit upon the perfect environment, Heather?
Well, I think it's just part of natural that we'll be evolving constantly. And I think we've had a lot of changes in the workplace with mobility, for example. Technology has made us able to work anywhere at any time. So when people come to the office now, they could work anywhere, so we want to draw them to the office for a reason. So really, we see the office as a place that a company can actually display their culture and have a space that embodies their culture. So they really want to invite you to the space. So part of that is really distilling that essence of your company and what that stands for. Also, people are looking for a variety of different spaces. They don't want to be tethered to one workstation all day long. They want to be able to flow from a collaborative space to an informal kind of brainstorming space to a breakout space to maybe a heads down space. We also provide phone rooms for people so they can make private phone conversations because, you know, they're at the office all day and this is our new world where we're there all the time. So we really see it more as kind of like a variety of spaces.
But if you're an entrepreneur and you're a startup and you only have, it's just you, maybe you and a partner, but most of the time just you, why do you need a collaborative space? Who are you collaborating with? I'm in one business, you're in another, he's in a third, she's in a fourth. What could we possibly collaborate on?
So the collaboration side of things is something that I still go back and forth on. Most of our members, collaboration is not what they're doing. It's just they're co-living together. This is like these are people that we know. They're our friends now. We come in, we chat a little bit, and we all get to work. The collaboration side of things, I would say very few people have actually found a reason to work together at Huga.
Well, how is that different from being at the office, a traditional office where you have office friends? Your office friends or the people at your work are your office family. And you chat throughout the day periodically, but you're doing your work. How is it different from that?
I think, you know, the people that come to us typically are solo entrepreneurs, freelancers, things like that.
And they don't have an office family.
Correct. So essentially you have a bunch of people, you know, you could have a dozen, two dozen businesses all operating within one space. They each have their own niche. So at Advent Coworking, we have some collaboration where, you know, folks are picking up jobs. So we'll have a graphic designer working with a web guy and vice all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And Garrett, you said that you want to be around people that do things and to empower people to do things.
Absolutely.
So you're saying that being around other people who are trying to get things done, it may encourage you to get things
absolutely.
Done?
Absolutely. So I would say 2 years ago, I was incredibly unmotivated and surrounding myself with people that are getting things done is the most inspiring thing.
It's a kick in the pants.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Like, you know, you look at, you know, yesterday a media company released a top 30 under 30, and I'm leading that list going like, God, what was I doing when I was 23? Like, it's incredibly inspiring reading that list and going, these people are doing amazing things. That makes me want to do more amazing things.
So what are the basic ingredients of these spaces from a designer's point of view? I know you all have coffee machines, and I read yesterday that designer coffee is really important. You can't just have Maxwell House.
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, have good coffee.
Coffee. That's the first ingredient. Aside from that, what goes into these spaces?
Well, I think as humans, we're genuinely attracted to things that are aesthetically pleasing, right? So I think that you've seen the workplace change a little bit from so much corporate culture to almost a non-precious culture. So I think people are drawn to that aesthetic.
Non-precious?
Yeah, so instead of kind of a polished, everything's finished, you have more of a collected look, and it might be more put together than kind of assembled rather than totally curated for the space.
What comes to mind when I think of some of these spaces is Google and
yes.
some and Red Hat and some of these high-tech companies that are almost like grown-up playgrounds, where they provide toys and they provide opportunities for recreation during the business day. It's encouraged. Is that what's happening in most of these spaces? And we have 10 seconds.
Well, I think that one thing you see now is beer taps at the office. Who would have thought?
We'll come back to that. They'll be installed moments from now right here. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Pike's Pharmacy. Since 1919, four generations of the Pike family have been providing pharmacy service to Charlotte. Located on Shamrock Drive with prescriptions online at pikespharmacy.com. On the Friday News Roundup, a federal appeals court strikes down North Carolina's voter ID law, saying it's discriminatory. Another court is deciding whether or not to suspend HB2, while lawsuits over it wind their way through the courts. The governor allows a bill that transfers money from disaster relief to HB2 defense to become law without his signature. And we get an update on CMS student assignment plans. Those stories and more with our roundtable of reporters on the local news roundup tomorrow on this program at 9.
on the next Diane Rehm Show. Donald Trump has not released his tax returns. If this continues, he'll be the first major party presidential nominee in 40 years not to disclose them. The history of tax disclosure by presidential candidates and whether the public has the right to know.
Join the Diane Rehm Show following Charlotte Talks from 10 to noon on 90.7 WFAE, listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Later on in the program, we're going to talk about a phenomenon of people adopting, well, focusing their lives on pets as opposed to children. We'll get to that in a moment. Right now, we're talking about co-working spaces with Ryan Mitchell, co-founder of Advent Co-working, Garrett Tishy, owner of Huga Co-working, and Heather Linton, who kind of helps design these for various clients around the country. She's the senior interior project manager for Perkins and Will. And just before the break, I asked you what goes into this. What ingredients make up a good co-working space? And the first thing you mentioned was beer taps. What?
Well, do see many more amenities now in the workspace, and that can be one of them. And actually, we're just having a conversation offline about that. So I think Ryan and Garrett were saying how people are less likely to actually participate with that.
Well, I think you need to kind of build that culture. So when we initially opened, I think people had to see us start doing some of these things to almost like get permission to do it. But now we've kind of hit that critical mass where people will put something out in the space and we run these little experiments. So we'll put something out and just kind of see what people do with it. And now they feel much more free to interact with new things like that.
So when we talk about amenities that I guess come with the price of admission, what are they at your two respective locations?
So for a let's say, flex membership, that just means come in, work anywhere in the open space. Then and that can change throughout the day. You can pick a new space every day. So it's 24/7 access. You have a door code. You can come in, unlimited coffee, Wi-Fi, access to meeting space, and yeah.
And so at Advent, we have similar setup. So for our flex membership, you get 24/7 access as well. We have a podcast studio, a meeting room, an event space, free beer, free coffee.
Why do you have a podcast studio?
It was something that personally I enjoyed, but then also I saw a need in Charlotte. Just people wanted to do more podcasting. It's kind of an up-and-coming medium where people can actually like gain some ground if they're starting out.
So are there regular podcasts being produced out of your space?
Yeah, we have about 20 shows running out of our show.
Are they on iTunes?
Yep.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So what kinds of topics are they talking about? And are they in competition with this?
So we have a range of topics. We have just general sports. We have Charlotte, just general stuff. We have a dating podcast, a tiny house podcast, a couple different other shows all in one space.
I'm going to have you shut down. It sounds like every topic we've ever done on this show. So is there a right kind of – these sound like very hip spaces to me. Are they?
We're biased, yes.
So is there a certain kind of furniture, a certain kind of look, a certain kind of feel that is created by design or the choice of colors or the choice of fabric on the chair or whatever it is that has to be in these spaces to make people feel that, this is a cool place to be?
I think it's kind of a mix of all of that, how it comes together. And wanting to create something genuine that reflects your company and your brand and your style. And one part that we can help to identify that is through storytelling. So making your space unique by trying to capture exactly what your company stands for, what their goals are, what you're passionate about.
The Charlotte Ted Williams, writing for Charlotte Agenda, toured all of the co-working spaces that were open and running, I think, in January of this year, and said that there are no bad co-working options in Charlotte. To me, that says the competition must be intense if everybody's really good at this, and there's a lot of demand for this. And how many are there? I mean, there are like 10 of these locations.
There's quite a few. I think really what it comes down to is each different co-working space has its own flavor, its own personality, its own culture.
Describe yours.
So I think we tend definitely open space, more collaborative because we don't have closed door offices.
What's it look like?
Basically a gigantic open space, white walls with really popping art pieces that we have from local artists that we transition every quarter or so. A lot of mid-century modern furniture, you know, nice chandeliers and things like that. So,
and why did you choose to go in that direction?
Yeah, it was just something that me and my co-founder, Kevin Jurnas, really, we liked creative environments and we wanted to be surrounded by nice art and we liked mid-century modern furniture, things like that. But I think with co-working in general in Charlotte, people kind of shop around and they just find the place that fits
feels
them.
Right.
Yeah.
How would you describe your location?
So we're Huga is a so we have an old industrial building that from the exterior looks like a loading dock for an old warehouse. On the inside, it's a definitely a mix of you know exposed brick walls and then a little bit of modern design in terms of furniture. You know, we worked with a friend's design firm that did our entire branding, all our design. I would say we have a lot of variety. Like you walk through our space and everything is very different, whereas Kevin and Ryan went for something that feels very consistent across the board. You walk in and it feels like this is one room, everything.
So I was going to ask you guys what kind of a person, not what kind of business they're trying to create or they're actually in, but what kind of a person is attracted to your space versus your space. And it really is a personal choice. It's a personality thing. You walk in it, the environment clicks with you. Can you try it on for size? I mean, if you know you want to work in one of these places, but you don't know which one is right for you, can you try it on for size?
Absolutely. So anybody that comes in that is interested in the space can work for up to a week for free. So come in. I would much rather... I find that a day pass for free is too little. The space ebbs and flows too often. So if you show up on a Friday, that's your first day. It's too quiet. If that could be a turnoff to somebody, where if you come in on a Monday, it's busy. Tuesday, we had an event, so it's a little noisier. Wednesday, it's quiet someday. So I would rather people go and see all of that.
Same thing for you, Ryan, or is it different?
Yeah, so we, you know, we do day passes, and we have folks that try out the space. So on Friday is International Coworking Day. We've actually got all the coworking spaces in Charlotte, Concord, and Fort Mill to open their doors so that people can try coworking, see what's right for them. So you can come on Friday to any of the coworking spaces in those cities.
How is this different from Starbucks? I mean, the price of admission at Starbucks is nothing. I mean, you can buy a cup of coffee if you want to, but they don't seem to make you. Yeah. But you can sit there all day with your computer and work. So, I mean, how is this different?
It's not a controlled environment. That is, as someone that worked a lot in Starbucks and different coffee shops, I find the environment is, there's too many variables, especially at a Starbucks. You know, kids, loud music.
No outlets, things like that.
No outlets.
Yeah.
Let me go back to something that Charlotte Agenda wrote about these co-working spaces, because I think it's interesting. One of the big draws for all of these co-working spaces are the members themselves. Who is in there with you? Do you curate these people? I mean, seriously, if it's important that you be with people that you enjoy being with, how do you make that happen as the owners of these places?
I think for us, it's communicating our story and our culture so that people either click with that or they don't. And if they click with it, then they'll join and they'll fit right in. And if it's not kind of their scene, then they'll go check out another co-working space, which might suit them just fine.
Yeah, we all have very different approaches. Actually, I applaud Advent and Kevin and Ryan. What they did in the beginning was, before they even opened, did meetups and events focused on bringing creatives together, essentially built a community before they even had space, which is genius and worked really well for y'all. I find that the events that they do continues to draw people into the space, which are obviously quite targeted. For me, we don't focus too hard on the events, and our brand is pretty broad in that I'm more interested in having a lot of diversity throughout the space. I want the, 21-year-old remote worker, and I want the 65-year-old, nonprofit executive director.
How does that work? Because they're very different people.
absolutely. And it's, I would say that our space is, because of how different and broken up and segmented it can be, gives people a lot of variety and choice.
One of you mentioned when we were talking about the various different kinds of spaces in these places that they offer, mentioned head down space, which I interpreted as being nap time space. And I know that Huga has a day bed and cushions and pillows and blankets. people come there to sleep, not to work.
it's crazy. We just added like a lounge room. It's a little bit darker. The walls are dark. It's got, you know, dark curtains and everything. And I was kind of against it when the designer proposed it. It is the most used room we have.
I think people are looking for a way to take a break in the middle of their very stressful day. It's almost like a little space for a respite. And we're seeing more studies on the advantages of taking micro breaks throughout the day, how that can really help you be more productive rather than just burning through the whole 10-hour day.
And because you're 24/7 access, you don't have to get your work done in an 8-hour day. You can take 2 hours off to go to the gym or socialize there or take a little nap there, and maybe your work day is 10 hours, or you come back after 2 hours at the gym and work till 10 o'clock at night.
Totally flexible. We do have 8-to-5ers, though. There are people that show up promptly at 8 and leave at 5.
There seems to be – there would be a lot of socialization in this atmosphere, and there would certainly be a lot of uncontrollable activity going on that might be distracting to you. Sometimes work has to get done, and it has to get done on a deadline. Are there space? How do you, in an open environment, how do you find a way around so many other people doing so many other things to concentrate and get it out? Because there are times when you don't want distractions.
I think people that sign up for co-working understand what they're getting into. If you're easily distracted by anything in the vicinity, coworking might not be for you.
What about the need to keep ideas proprietary? A lot of entrepreneurs are working on new things that they think they have the cutting edge here and no one else has it, so it's important that they do this and develop this product as secretly as possible to launch it into the world when they're ready. How do you keep proprietary things proprietary? How do you think if you're working on a client project, and sometimes the clients don't want what you're working on to be known to the public until it's ready to go. How do you keep that confidential in these open environments?
Yes.
Where it's not just you working at a one company where everybody's kind of in on the client's project, but you got everybody all over you. You could be next to a competitor.
Yeah, so we, even though we have an open space, we have a variety of, you know, semi-private spaces. So we have a conference room where you can go shut the door, pull the curtains, and no one can hear or see you. If you need to have a quiet phone call, we have two phone booths where you can go in and it's basically a sound booth and you can have that, you know, confidential conversation within that phone booth.
But not everybody has private spaces.
Definitely. And I would say this, as we're talking about like co-working being this like new trend, there is still an incredible demand for offices with doors. We're turning, and I know industry co-working up in the NC Music Factory is facing this, like we are turning away between 5 and 10 people a week that want an office with a door. So while co-working is booming, the idea of working in an open space, we still, if I had 100 offices, they'd all be full.
A lot of traditional offices and companies are borrowing from this concept of co-working, I understand, Heather, and they want to create these spaces within their own company. What's driving this? Why?
I think there's a definite draw to that social interaction, and you can have social interaction in your overall office space, but creating these kind of co-working niches, if you will, it really harkens back to the more entrepreneurial spirit. And I think if they kind of see corporations putting teams there so they're able to be more focused and less disrupted by the traditional business as usual, emails and whatnot.
You say that competition for talent
is
driving current demand for updated workspaces at traditional companies. So you're saying that young people want these amenities. They want this flexibility. They want this environment. And if you want to get those people as part of your talent pool, you have to create these spaces.
We've seen stats like 80% of the millennials will weigh in on their decision, what their space looks like. So that means design is important, and design is important to the bottom line of the companies. And what we're seeing now with the new amenities, more collaborative space, connection to the social aspect is becoming more and more important.
GE has done this. Mm-hmm. KPMG has done this. Pharmaceutical giant Merck has done this. Is it happening at major companies in Charlotte? We know about the co-working spaces that are set aside as such, But what about the big companies in Charlotte, the Banks of America, the Duke Energies, and other companies that are relatively low, Coca-Cola, for instance? Is it happening at those companies?
I think everyone's kind of considering how they might apply that. But we've definitely seen it in other cities like Atlanta, Chicago, and San Francisco.
Hmm. Jonathan on Facebook writes, I launched my business last month and work out of Huga. I needed a place to work and meet with clients, which makes a space like this very attractive. Clients are impressed that my business isn't based out of the local Starbucks. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And it provides me with an affordable launch pad to grow my business. It's not the first time you've heard that, I'm sure.
No. That's why we moved into co-working in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So you're an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur, Ryan mm-hmm. Garrett. Do you think did you have companies other than co-working companies? Have you segued into this being your business, running these co-working operations?
So I have a small marketing company called Ready at Seven mm-hmm. That does digital marketing and SEO. It's just a 2-person team. So that's kind of the main thing that makes me money. Huga came out of a passion for the idea of being in the space. I started in a co-working space and said, I really love this. We should do this and do it bigger. And then obviously opened our own and have grown and grown and grown.
Right.
Yeah, and I started out with a website called thetinylife.com where I've been writing for 7 years now. So that's like kind of my mainstay. And then we added co-working to the mix.
The Harvard Business Review reports that studies have shown that people who work in these co-working environments thrive. They've measured it on a 7-point scale, with 7 being the highest amount of thriving going on. And most of these people report an average of 6, which is pretty darn good. And one of the reasons these studies have found is that people who work there find their work more meaningful. Why? Because they're around other people that they can see who are also thriving, so therefore it must be meaningful?
I think, for people it comes down to connection, right? They want relationships. They want to be surrounded by, like you were saying, you want to be surrounded by people who are, moving in life. They're achieving things.
I think especially if you're seeing a little bit of success as a new entrepreneur, a social entrepreneur, being working at home, you have nobody to share that with and even Jenny, my wife, she has a hard time relating to, she's excited for me when we have success, but she doesn't live in the world that I live in. She works the traditional 9-to-5. So having those like-minded people around you to celebrate with is big.
And the other thing that they report is being more productive, more confident, more creative, and they like being in a communal atmosphere without the office politics, because you're not all working for the same company. You're all in different endeavors, and so there's no backbiting and no gossip and no stabbing or it's trying to steal your idea and getting favor with the boss. I never thought about that. That's a great idea. Is that what's happening?
Well, there's definitely no drama, which is nice.
All right. Well, I don't know how many co-working spaces there are in Charlotte, but a lot of them. And evidently, according once again to Charlotte Agenda, you can't go wrong. They're all great. So we'll see how far this trend goes. That's for you guys' sake. I hope it goes a long time. Garrett Tishy is the owner of Huga. Ryan Mitchell, the co-founder of Advent Co-Working, and Heather Litton, senior interior project manager for Perkins & Will, who helps design some of these spaces for other companies. Thanks for joining us. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Firehouse Casual Living Stores, serving the Carolinas for nearly 40 years with branded outdoor patio seating and dining furniture. Showrooms located on Johnston Road and W.T. Harris Boulevard. Details at fhcasual.com. Donald Trump has not released his tax returns. If this continues, he'll be the first major party presidential nominee in 40 years not to disclose them. The history of tax disclosure by presidential candidates and whether the public has the right to know. The topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. We're talking about dinks with dogs. Double income, no kids, but pets. Okay? It's a new trend. It seems to be a growing trend. We'll be back to talk about that in just a moment. If you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter @charlottetalks.
In these turbulent times, the importance of independent public radio programming on WFAE is at an all-time high. So too are the costs to produce and broadcast the programs you depend on. As we work to bring you election coverage and breaking news coverage from around the world, we hope you'll consider making a donation of any amount today. Call 704-549-9000 or donate online at WFAE.org now. Thanks.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Whether they work from a traditional office, from home, or from a coffee shop, or one of those new co-working spaces, there are plenty of young two-income couples who are making another choice to delay having children. But in the meantime, they're turning their attention to and exercising their nurturing tendencies on pets. There's a name for these folks, dinks, or double income, no kids. Add a dog, for instance, and you have dinks with dogs. And there is a culture springing up around them as businesses cater to this rising trend. Kristen Weil wrote about this from a personal point of view in Charlotte Magazine, where she is senior editor. And you can find that story in the August issue, which also focuses entirely, as I understand it, on pets. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Kristen joins us along with Kelly Waugh, who, along with her husband, Randy, is owner of Lucky Dog Bark and Brew, a popular dog bar, much more than that, actually, with locations in Charlotte and Cornelius. And that's right, you heard me correctly. It's a dog bar. Welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
We've heard about dinks, double income, no kids, young adults, for a long time. When did pets become replacements for kids?
You know, for me personally, it wasn't a conscious decision that that was the case. My husband and I are both journalists. We take our jobs very seriously. We feel a great responsibility to do good by doing good journalism. And we are both very career focused. And we got our dog, first dog Rosie, from the Humane Society of Charlotte, and started realizing how little time we had to do other things. And I think a lot of people are in the same boat as us, where you have a job you're very focused on, you have a dog that you love, and there's just very little time for anything else. And we realized that kids would just be another responsibility that I don't think we have the time to handle very well.
But I have friends with dogs, and I had dogs growing up, and they're a tremendous responsibility. I mean, they're not like cats. They they need you, and you got to be home to feed them, and you have to walk them, and all kinds of stuff goes on with dogs. What is your story, Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that my husband and I, we've always been career-minded, career-focused, and the idea of having children, and it crossed our mind for a little bit. We talked about it, but we have four dogs and one cat, so that's our world. And
you don't have time for kids.
We really don't. We love our travel. We love our social life.
You know, it is becoming more acceptable. It didn't used to be acceptable. It's more acceptable now to marry later in life. It's more acceptable to live together without benefit of marriage. It's more acceptable not to have children. And the Census Bureau backs that up, noting that the number of people opting not to have children has been on a steady rise since 1976. Is this because there are more people in the more women, particularly in the workplace, and more women in the workplace who realize, you know, you can't have it all. You have to make decisions. You have to make choices.
I would say that's a big part of it. And we've learned, being dinks with dogs, we've met a lot of other dinks with dogs. And we meet them in the weirdest ways. And they're both pieces of the marriage are very career-oriented. And they just don't have the time. And someone would have to sacrifice some of their time. Mm-hmm. And it's a hard decision to make who that would be.
Some people might see this as being selfish. I don't think it's being selfish to concentrate on yourself and knowing who you are and what you want in life. And if you don't want a child, that's your business and nobody else's. But if you have the time or the need to focus your attention and your affection and the aspects of nurturing that are part of your personality on a pet, why not have a kid? If you feel the need to have a pet, why not have a kid?
That's a great question. And with dogs, I think you have a lot more leeway to focus on what you want to do. I read about food a lot for the magazine, so I'm out to dinner a lot of times. My husband travels a lot for work, and luckily we have places like Lucky Dog, where when we have dinners after work, we'll drop our dogs off in the morning. We can pick them up until 9, so we can go out to dinner. We can leave the dinner there, and they come home. They're happy from playing all day. They're exhausted, and I mean, it's a lot like daycare, but with less guilt, because if I had a child, I would feel so terrible just never seeing them,
right,
you know, during the week. And with dogs, they're happy to have their doggy play dates.
Let's talk about what Lucky Dog Bark and Brew is and how it came about. There are, sure, two locations, Charlotte and Cornelius. And I mentioned that it's a place you can take your dog, and it's a dog bar. But it's more than where you can go just have a socialized drink and bring your dog. It's more than that. What is it?
Sure. So where it came about is my husband and I used to go to the dog parks all the time. We'd bring our dogs to play prior to going out for football, watching the game. And we'd want to wear them out so that they could be tired, not chew on things, destroy the house while we were gone. And just kind of came up the idea of, if I had a cooler and a TV and maybe some air conditioning, I'd stay at the dog park all day. And so we kind of came up with the model. Worked really well in Cornelius, started the bar side of it, and then also incorporated the daycare and the boarding and the baths as well.
You wrote about this, your personal story, Kirsten, mm-hmm, in the Charlotte Magazine's August edition, which is all about pets. And I'm told that as a result of writing about your personal story, you have heard a lot from other working women about this. What are you hearing from your readers?
You know, it's been really fascinating because I'm sure you know when you get feedback, a lot of times it's just people who want to yell at you.
Boy, do I know.
And so I was, you know, when I got that first email with the subject line "Dink Story," I was just like, "Oh no, you know, who did I anger now?" And all of the feedback I've gotten has been either, "Thank you for being so honest with your story, for saying, you know, you're a strong woman who doesn't want to have kids, and that's okay." And the other part has been other dog rescue lovers who, like us, have fostered, mm-hmm, a dog or rescued a dog that may not have been the most perfect pet in the beginning, but with a lot of work and training, you learn to love them.
You spend a lot of time, because you have two adopted pit bulls.
We do.
And a tortoise.
Yes.
I'm sure the tortoise doesn't take much of your attention.
He's a good stress reliever, just watching him run around. We actually had an outdoor pen built for him.
But you have two pit bulls, mm-hmm, and your husband was not too keen, I'm told.
He was not.
On having a pit bull. You had to kind of, the first pit bull had to win him over.
Yes.
And did,
yes,
evidently.
Eventually.
But one of these pit bulls, and I'm not sure it was the first one or the second one, or whether it was, it's Titan and who?
Mm-hmm. Rosie.
Okay. I don't know which one is the one that had the problem in a previous existence, but they didn't have a pleasant life.
Neither of them did.
Okay.
So Rosie was left. She was dropped off by someone at a friend's house with her mom, and said the owner said, "Oh, I'll just come feed them. I don't have room for them right now. So just keep them in the backyard. I'll drop off food." And that person stopped feeding them. Mm. So and the homeowner also stopped feeding them. So she was in a backyard in January when it was like 9 degrees out. It was a cold spell about 2 years ago, and was just not fed for like a month.
Well, two things that come to mind when I read that story, and that is, a pit bull is frightening in and of itself because of the bad reputation that pit bulls have gotten over time. Whether it's deserved or not, I do not know, but I think other people would say that he's not deserved, mm-hmm, and you say that too.
Yes.
But adopting a pit bull that has been mm-hmm, abused or, mm-hmm, mistreated, it has a psychosis,
yeah,
seems to me that would be even more difficult and require a lot of time, attention, love, nurturing, et cetera, to bring it up to, mm-hmm, a level where you'd feel comfortable with it and you'd feel comfortable having friends around,
yeah,
it. How's that different from raising a toddler?
You know, it's tough because it's a lot of responsibility to people that we have around our dog, to, you know, pit bulls as a breed, because as you said, they're very misunderstood. They're wonderful dogs, but just they're put in terrible situations, and people put that on the breed instead of the humans, who I think take a lot of the blame for the problems. But with Rosie, it's just loud noises were a problem. She was scared of new people, especially men, for a really long time, and it's been absolutely incredible and absolutely inspiring to see how she's changed in the first, I mean, by the first year.
Yeah, you're a writer, so you wrote that it was heartbreaking to know where she came,
yes,
from, and heartwarming to see how far she's come.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I mean, other than having to lick our face all the time, you would never know where she came from, what she's been through. And Titan's the same way. He was left on the side of the road and waited all day for somebody to come back and pick him up who dropped him off, and the person never did. He was 67 pounds, and now he's 100, and that's his healthy weight.
Mm-hmm.
So
So how much time do you think you've spent getting these dogs to this point where they know they are loved and where they are pleasant to be around and where they're happy?
Rosie, I would say, probably took about 6 or 7 months before she was more confident. And when we got our second dog, actually helped her confidence a significant amount. Titan really helped her come out of her shell and be less afraid in new situations. Titan still has pretty bad separation anxiety. He has accidents in the house when we leave. But when we get back, he's just happy to see us. And that's the one thing we're still working on with him.
And Kelly, you have 4 dogs and a cat and a husband and 2 businesses. Mm-hmm. That must take your entire day, every day.
I also work full-time in the mortgage industry.
What?
It does. It's a lot. But
so why 4 dogs? That seems to me to be a lot of responsibility.
I would have 4 more if I could, if my
really?
Husband would let me. Oh, my gosh, yeah. They're all rescues, including the cat.
Explain it to people who don't understand it. Explain it to what this does for you.
So you have a lot, a busy day, and you come home, and there's never been a time where my dog doesn't greet me at the door, all 4 of them, super excited, you know, can't wait to love me. And for me, it's such a warming experience. And like she had mentioned about how you see the transition in the dogs. We see it at Lucky Dog all the time. You'll get people that'll rescue dogs and bring them in, and you'll see a scared, timid dog. And just by the love and care that you get from a parent, like a pet parent, or they start to convert and become these amazing animals that they always have been, you know. It's just people didn't give them a chance.
You are not alone. We are hearing from some listeners. Shelby on Facebook writes, I'm 36, my husband's 39. We're childless by choice, and we have 4 dogs. We don't feel like the odd ones out, as we have a large network of friends, both married and unmarried, who are in our age group and also don't have kids. We take trips together a couple of times a year and joke that we'll have to one day live in a commune so we can take care of each other when we get old. Essentially, the freedom, both financially and in time, for ourselves to do things like travel and start our own businesses is what motivates us. Personally, this is something that I think is in one of your stories, the fact that dogs, a person with a dog in a park finds themselves a magnet. People will talk to them because of their dog, and people with other people with dogs have something in common that they can bond over and talk about. Is that mm-hmm. what you're experiencing here?
Yeah, I think it's the same. You know, people with kids the same age love to talk about kids' stories. We love to talk about our dog stories. Anytime anyone will listen, I'll say something cute one of our dogs did recently. And yeah. I have to actually stop myself because I don't want to be that person talking about my dogs all the time. But it's really hard because they're just so cute.
I show pictures of my dogs all the time. They're everywhere I go. You know, we're just like parents, but in a different form, you know, obviously not discrediting what parents do because it's a different level. But for us, this is what we have, and it's heartwarming and it's fulfilling.
Lucky Dog Bark and Brew is not just a daycare or for dogs, although it is. It is a bar. I mean, you serve drinks to adults, adult beverages to adult people, mm-hmm. and they're allowed to bring their dogs, which is the opposite of a lot of other establishments where you can't bring your dog in. What kind of reaction do you get from people when they find you?
Actually, in Charlotte, when we opened our second location, people were thanking us, which I'd never experienced. I mean, Cornelius has been amazing, and the community has really kind of wrapped their arms around us and supported us so great. But when we opened in Charlotte, I remember the first weekend we had a couple hiccups, you know, grand opening weekend, and people are just so kind and so amazing to us for having a place where they could bring their dog and meet people for so long. We can do singles events. Just having a dog and talking with other people that love dogs, we've made more connections with friends. We've made more couple connections just because of the like-minded.
And one of the I read that one of the reasons you started this in the first place was because you were didn't want to leave your dogs at home. And
sure.
Here you can bring your dogs with you.
Yeah.
These dogs are like children, aren't they? I mean, they're children.
Yeah. I mean, they're dependent on you, and it's just something that you can handle so much easier. and you get the love. You walk in the door and you have somebody standing there wagging their whole butt waiting for you. You know, it's such a wonderful feeling, but without the extra pressure of bringing another human into this world. I mean, it's just a magnificent pressure, and I don't know that with everything else going on, it's one that my husband and I want to take on.
Okay. Katie emails, I'm a 33-year-old who has never had any desire to have kids. I have always grown up with dogs, and I have always wanted to have dogs in my life. I would much rather have dogs than kids for many reasons. Have you heard that before?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the reasons are what? Aside from the fact that you're not going to have put aside money to put this dog in college for 4 years at $40,000 a year, aside from that, and you don't have to buy clothes for it.
Well, you can.
But, well, you can, and you still have to feed it. And one of you spends $55 a week on dog food.
I'm sure they're spending more.
And vet expenses are not cheap. So you're still kind of raising a child. You're still spending money and time and effort. And
sure. I think for us is, my husband always jokes, is your dog's so spoiled. And I always say, what's going to happen? Is she going to be a bad adult? You know, there's no pressure that if my dog grows up, she can be as bad as she wants. I'll still love her to death, you know. She's not going to be bad to the world, though. And I agree with you, is that the pressure of raising a child and making sure that they're, you know, a good part of the community is overwhelming for me. It's not something that I care to take on.
And obviously, through your business, Lucky Dog Bark and Brew, you are meeting a lot of like-minded individuals. You suddenly feel, hey, I'm not the odd guy out here. I'm actually part of a big community of people who are doing this. Is that what you're finding through these articles you've written in Charlotte Magazine?
So many people have reached out, and you know, we volunteer with the American Pit Bull Foundation.
You can read Kristen Wiley's article and all of the other articles about pets in this month's Charlotte Magazine. Kelly Waugh, owner of Lucky